This episode of Between the Rows was brought to you in part by Bayer. Bayer continues to make significant investments into the development of new breeding technologies and state-of-the-art cropping solutions to ensure the profitability and sustainability of your farm. This season, grow with confidence. Grow with Bayer.
Welcome to Between the Rows, where you get to hear the stories behind the stories in Canada's leading farm publications. Today, we hear from the Manitoba Cooperator's Alan Dawson about the Keep It Clean campaign.
A product that's not registered in another country will have a zero limit, a residue limit. So there's concern that if a residue shows up that it could impact the trade with that country.
Lisa Gunther of Grain News highlights two products designed to make grain bins safer.
Well, it's the whole idea of crawling up a bin with a 50-mile-an-hour wind and you're hanging on. A gust comes along, it could blow you off, and it just makes sense to be enclosed.
And Phil Franz-Workington of Commodity News Service Canada gives us his take on the markets.
A fair bit of attention on just how much canola is left out there from last year.
All on Between the Rows with this week's host, Ed White.
Hello and welcome to Between the Rows. I'm Ed White, your host this week. Well, believe it or not, harvest is just around the corner, and that means what farmers have done to their crops this summer and will do in the next few weeks can have a big and lingering impact on what goes into the bin. There are some things farmers should keep in mind, and those are addressed by the Keep It Clean program. Reporter Alan Dawson joins us now to tell us about Keep It Clean. Hi, Alan, and welcome to Between the Rows.
Hi, Ed.
So what is Keep It Clean?
Well, it's an industry program organized by some of the industry groups like Cereals Canada, the Canola Council of Canada, Pulse Canada, which represent grain companies, exporters, as well as farmers through the various commodity and commission-type organizations that exist in Western Canada.
And why is this such a big issue right now?
Well, they're kind of on two levels. I'd say the immediate concern or issue that faces farmers is the declarations that they sign in the fall ahead of the new crop year that states that they're not going to deliver products or grains that have certain pesticides having been used on them. That's sort of the immediate top of mind issue. And then, but the bigger issue, I guess, connected to that is the impact that having unwanted residues on grains and oil seeds and pulses could have on trade in terms of importers of those products. Even though many pesticides are registered in Canada and are legal to use, there are some importing countries that haven't recognized those products yet or haven't allowed them to be used. So a residue of a product that's not registered in another country will have a zero limit, a residue limit. So there's concern that if a residue shows up that it could impact the trade with that country.
What are some of the products that get particular notice? What tends to create the bigger problems for some of the users and processors and grain companies?
Well, on the declaration form that's coming out, that it's available for the 2017-18 crop year, there's a list of five specific products that the Western Grain Elevator Association doesn't want to see coming into its system, and farmers, when they sign this declaration, are saying that they haven't used these products. And a manipulator, a growth regulator, is one of them, and it's been on this declaration form for a while that the companies don't want to see. Another one, which has also been on the list for a couple of years, is a herbicide called Clever Dry Flow Herbicide, which is used or potentially used in controlling cleavers and canola. There's a couple of fungicides. One's called Quash, which is used in canola. Another called Evito fungicide in soybeans. And then there's a couple of other fungicides. One called Elatus Copac, and another called Trivapro, which is used in soybeans. And then another one, Heat, which is a pre-harvest burn-off that's used in wheat, durum, barley, and flax. So those are the five that are on the declaration form that farmers are going to be asked, to say that they didn't use them on their crops this growing season.
And what about pre-harvest glyphosate? It seems at every farm meeting there's talk about doing that wisely if you're going to do it. Does that come into this, or is that a totally separate issue?
Yeah, no, that's part of the keeping it clean message as well. And glyphosate, as you know, Ed, and probably most of our listeners know too, has attracted a lot of attention. The World Health Organization concluded a while back that it was possibly a cancer-causing agent. And although I should point out that the Pest Management Regulatory Agency in Canada does not share that view, it feels that glyphosate doesn't present an unacceptable risk to humans. But nevertheless, some countries, because of that health organization message, are more concerned about glyphosate, and so Cereals Canada is reminding farmers that some of these importing countries are going to be watching very closely. And even though many have a certain allowable level of residue of glyphosate, they'll be looking for samples that exceed those levels. And one way to avoid that problem is not to be applying glyphosate as a pre-harvest product on crops, either too early or too late. And too early is when the kernels are still pretty green, the crop is 30% moisture or higher. That's too early. And of course, going too late can also result in residues that would exceed the maximum limits that some importers have.
And just to be cynical for a moment, why should a farmer care about what the grain elevator companies, the processors, or the marketers want? What is in it for the farmer to do things right by what these others say?
Well, you know, just like mentioned, we talked at the beginning, the two things, the declarations and then the trade impact, potentially. So if you declare that you haven't used these products and then are found out to have, there could be legal implications between, you know, coming from the grain buyer. But the bigger question, of course, or issue is the potential impact it could have on all Canadian exports of a particular grain or crop. And a sample comes in that's exceeded a level, it could become a trade irritant and might even affect trade this year or perhaps even in the future.
So, Alan, where do we find information about all the specifics of this program?
Well, it's a great website called keepingitclean.ca, and it's got the list of those five products that we talked about and a very extensive chart regarding pulse crops. There's a lot of different products, and some pulse crops a product can be used, and on another pulse crop it can't be. So the pulse crop one is a little bit more complex than some of the others, and that site has a lot of information on that.
Well, thanks for joining us today, Alan.
Thank you.
Alan Dawson is a reporter with the Manitoba Cooperator. You can read more of his work at manitobacooperator.ca. You're listening to Between the Rows. I'm Ed White, your host. Farms are hazardous places, and farmers and their families work and live amongst those hazards. Climbing on top of grain bins is one of them. Reporter Lisa Gunther caught up with two companies at Ag in Motion that deal with the risk of falls from grain bins, and she takes us now along to learn a little bit from them.
Yeah, I'm Richard Epp, president of Darmonic Grain Storage.
And, tell us about this grain elevator that we're looking at.
Well, it's a safety ladder, so to speak, so you can go up and down the bin safely, and, you can carry stuff up with you, and it's not slippery, or you can't fall off, and so it's just a safe way of accessing the top of the bin, eh?
So what does it take to set it up with the bin?
That's the same as putting on a ladder, eh?
Okay.
Yeah, you just bolt it on.
Okay.
And if you put them side by side, the bins, you can do one for two bins.
Darmani had an elevator set up as part of their bin display. It seemed simple to operate, so I gave it a whirl.
Just press the top of it to go up
and the bottom to go down. Okay. Okay. Meanwhile, a company called Northern Strands debuted their bin harness system at Ag in Motion. When I arrived at their booth, they were rigging up a dummy in the harness, which was anchored to the bin. Dave Perrin explained how it works.
So what we've done is we've come up with a concept to allow workers to be tied off 100% of the time while they are accessing the top of their grain bin. So what we've done is we've engineered an anchor system that attaches to the bin right at the top, and then we've run a 3/8 galvanized cable, which we like to refer to as a lifeline, all the way down the ladder. And then we attach a wire rope grab, which is a traveling system. The worker can then don a harness with a 4-foot lanyard, hook onto that traveler, and traverse up and down. They can climb right to the top of the bin, do any type of maintenance, any checks that they need to do. And while they're doing it, they're 100% tied off. So in case of a fall, that fall will be arrested, and they're not going to hit the ground.
Richard told me that as bins have gotten bigger, it's become even more hazardous for workers and farmers to climb on top of them with only a ladder.
Well, it's the whole idea of crawling up a bin with a 50-mile-an-hour wind and you're hanging on. A gust comes along, it could blow you off. And it just makes sense to be enclosed to going up an elevator. Eh? They're the common thing. Like, Alberta's got legislation now where you got to have some sort of protection going up. And, this is starting to make a lot more sense, eh?
Dave said that experience in mining and construction inspired Northern Strands to bring the bin harness system onto farms.
Yeah, yesterday was the first day, like I said, that we've had this out to the public, and seemed like everybody we talked to had a story. They either have fallen themselves or know somebody that has fallen. It's been very positive. We've had a couple of bigger companies come to us looking to become distributors and stuff like that. So we're very optimistic that we're going to be able to hit the ground running with this, and we're going to save some lives.
Thanks, Lisa. Lisa Gunther is a reporter with Grain News and Country Guide. You're listening to Between the Rows. I'm your host, Ed White. Phil Franz-Workington of Commodity News Service Canada joins us now to sum up today's tempestuous weather markets. Hello, Phil, and welcome to Between the Rows.
Hi, Ed. Good to be here.
So what are these big weather issues right now?
Well, the weather issues is it's the middle of the growing season, and the weather is all over the map, and the forecasts are all over the place as well, and that's causing some big price swings in the market. We saw some of the biggest moves, I guess, in spring wheat, where the drought issues in the U.S., North Dakota, Montana there caused spring wheat to rally, and now they got half an inch of rain or something, and it's dropped the past while. So the big moves there. Canola, similar issues. Half the crop's good, half the crop is uncertain, and that uncertainty keeps things moving about.
Canola has really sold off in recent days, and early this week it dropped below $500 a ton. What is going on there?
That is the question that everyone would like to know the answer to. The underlying fundamentals are supportive. Old crop supplies are tight, and you know these weather issues are out there. But the what's going on? It seems fund traders they were long and they're selling off, and that pushing it on the short side, and that's weighing on prices. And on top of it, we got the Canadian dollar. It's at 80 cents, which is its best in 2 years. So anytime the dollar goes up, that has the equal and opposite reaction on the other side on Canadian grain prices. So that's kind of adding to the softness in canola.
For Canadians, wheat and canola always seem to dominate what we're thinking about here because they're such big crops. But obviously in the United States, corn and soybeans are the dominant crops. What's going on with them and what are they doing to the overall market?
Well, soybeans and corn, they've got their own weather markets that they're playing off of right now. And, it's the middle of their growing season. So the forecast from day to day causes prices to rise or fall. They've got the kind of a different situation than canola in that old crop supplies are pretty big on both soybeans and corn, so it's not so much a matter of rationing demand, especially when we got big South American crops overhanging everything as well. But the I guess the weather hasn't really cooperated so far. Condition ratings out from the USDA yesterday showed downgrades for both soybeans and corn, larger than expected downgrades. So that should be, somewhat supportive from a pricing standpoint. But that said, the forecasts are looking a bit better with some rain and more moderate temperatures. So soybeans and corn, they've both been trending lower the last couple days a bit, and part of that also has to do with that spring wheat we were talking about, and seen large losses, and the losses there are kind of spilling over into soybeans and corn, which is usually it goes the other way, but that is the weirdness of the markets these days.
And is the Canadian dollar having any impact on any other markets? Are we seeing that show up?
It's shown up in the wheat as well. The like when we had the run up in Minneapolis spring wheat, the Canadian dollar was also, that's kind of tempered the strength of Canadian prices compared to the U.S. prices. So we've seen basis levels narrow in as far as Canadian wheat compared to U.S. wheat, but the any commodity that's being exported offshore out of Canada, that kind of cuts into profit margins a bit when the currency rises.
Whoever would have thought that wheat would have become such an interesting crop in the markets this year?
It is true. Usually it is not the it's not the driver of things. But yeah, definitely. Definitely, Canadian wheat is back at the forefront, I guess.
What's going on with old crop supplies as we, very much approach the end of the crop year here?
As far as old crop goes, there is a fair bit of attention on just how much canola is left out there from last year. The official numbers have us whittling it down to a pretty tight supplies given the strong export demand and strong domestic crush. So Agriculture and Agri-Food Canada has projecting ending stocks of 600,000 tons for this year, and anytime it's under a million, that's considered tight. And those tight supplies and the fact that we still don't, there's a fair bit of question marks on new crop production means some demand is going to have to be rationed, because as it stands now, this year's crop is unlikely to live up to last year's crop. So there'll be less canola to go around than in in 2017 than in 2016.
And there's still lots of time for weather to happen.
Exactly.
Well, thanks very much for joining us today, Phil.
Well, thank you.
That was Phil Franz-Workington with Commodity News Service Canada. That's all for this week on Between the Rows. I'm Ed White.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of Between the Rows. Our goal at Bayer is to continue to progress our lineup of high-performing seed and crop protection solutions so that we can meet specific grower needs like yours. Because when it comes to your farm, Bayer is with you from beginning to end. Between the Rows is a production of Glacier Farm Media, Canada's leading farm publisher. We'd love to hear what you think of the show and invite you to send your comments to btr@farmmedia.com or visit us at membersgetmore.ca and sign up today.